gals from Equine Connection, the Academy of Equine Assisted Learning. Hi, I'm Carrie.
I'm Carolyn.
And I'm Carson.
Welcome to our podcast.
You will be listening to some of our best moments of helping people to live their best lives, and all while, get this, working with horses.
We will be your hosts and have tons of guests along the way. Subscribe today and happy listening.
Hey, good morning, good day, good evening, wherever it is that you are at on this incredible day that we are alive.
Welcome, welcome to the second video in the Horse Welfare Series, and today we have an exciting guest to bring on the show with us.
You know, I absolutely love these next couple of months because all this for the next couple of months is about the welfare of the horse, and it's the welfare series, actually. And it's all about gaining more knowledge to understand. You guys, we owe it to our horse to actually take that huge component of the welfare piece to them. Because if we're not doing that, can you imagine where our horses must be in life without having that welfare piece? And welfare is, number one thing a horse needs is safety. Number one thing, safety and security. So how do we get to that place before we start doing all of the things that we want to do with them? And of course, the welfare piece also being, we as a human, we need to actually be very balanced in who we are before we start throwing it out to our beautiful horses. So today I'm so excited because we have a brilliant fellow who we have actually been working with on the website and learning a lot of amazing, beautiful, simple, makes logical sense techniques to help our horses to be at a balanced state. So it's super exciting. Yeah, we call them ponies. Now, this is kind of funny because I always call the horses ponies. I have no idea. I just call them, there's the pony pumps. But when we went to New Hampshire and she has Newfoundland ponies, all I kept calling her ponies was horses. So I think I'm a little dyslexic when it comes to horses and ponies. I have no idea.
So now to bring on our guest, we want to introduce Warwick Schiller, a lifelong equestrian of varying disciplines. Warwick moved from his home country of Australia in his 20s to the United States in order to pursue his dream of training horses. He focused his competitive efforts on reining, eventually becoming a National Reining Horse Association Reserve World Champion and also representing Australia at the 2010 and 2018 World Equestrian Games. His unique ability to convey his knowledge to others became apparent when he successfully went on to coach individuals who garnered coveted reining titles such as NRHA World Champions, NRHA Rookie of the Year, Australian Champions, US Champions, and a fellow WEG team member. So welcome, Warwick.
How are you guys up there in cold Canada?
Freezing, freezing, freezing cold. I'll be honest.
Yes, Warwick's in California, so he has the sunshine.
We don't have much sunshine today, but we're about, 40 degrees warmer than you, so that's good.
Yeah, it's way better. You know, so one of the first questions, and then I know the first time I went onto your online courses, you were saying making the wrong thing hard and the right thing easy. Now, I had to stop it several times to repeat what it was you were saying because my brain was like, I don't completely understand. It was kind of like doing this thing, and I don't even know if I'm doing that right. But I love that line.
Was it kind of like horses and ponies? You get them backwards.
Yeah, exactly. So how can you explain that to all of these beautiful people and how it relates to that welfare component of the horse?
Okay, well, for me personally, I think the biggest welfare component, you said before your horse needs to have comfort and safety. And I think the comfort, there may be some physical comfort too, but I think it's mostly a mental health. For me, it's mostly a horse mental health thing. Everything I do with them really is about the mental health. I mean, most people that have problems with a horse, the problem they're having is caused by anxiety. It doesn't matter what the problem is. Anxiety is the underlying cause. And I'm really starting to believe that it's the same with people too. No matter what the cause is, you know, they could be aggressive. They could be, you know, they could be addicted. They could be whatever. And you know, I don't have the experience with that, but you guys do. But I really think it all comes down to anxiety of some sort. But with the horses, the whole wrong thing, hard, right thing, easy thing, I think a lot of people, and I think it's the lens in which you view life through, but a lot of people seem to take that as a license to make things hard, whereas really it's about making things easy. And what it is, it's just a comparison. And I do this at Horse Expo, as I say, so it's just about comparison. So can everybody stand up for me? And I have everybody stand up. And I say, okay, so we're standing up hard. And they go, no, not really. So, okay, so now everybody sit down. So everybody sits down. I go, so is sitting down hard? And they go, no. I said, is it easier than standing up? And they go, well, yeah, it is. I said, that's the difference. That's the wrong thing, hard, right thing, easy. It's just about comparisons. It's not, in some instances, it's just about comparisons. It's not about the wrong thing is hard. It's the right thing is easier than the wrong thing.
That makes sense.
That makes sense there?
Yeah.
You know, like at those clinics, I'll say, you know, or if I'm doing a demo at a horse expo and they're going to be here for an hour and a half, I go, okay, would you like to stand up for the next hour and a half? Would you like to sit down? Yeah. So. And there's always something easier than that and harder than that, you know. And what I have started doing is I just came back from Australia recently, and where I flew to in Australia, it's a 14 and a half hour flight. And I tried to upgrade to the pointy end of the plane using some points on the way there, but I didn't get to. So I had to sit for 14 and a half hours instead of lay down for 14 and a half hours. So would you rather stand for 14 and a half hours or sit? You'd rather sit. But then there's another option. Would you rather lay down and rest for 14 and a half hours or sit up in a little chair like this? So it's all about, a lot of it's about comparisons. So, you know, I think we're a combative kind of a species, and we think that make the wrong thing hard is a license to, you know, basically punish our horses. And there's that wrong, whole wrong thing hard, right thing easy. I put it in several broad categories. One of them would be how you set things up. Okay. I'll give you I don't do it this way, but this would be a way you could do it. Say you wanted to teach a horse to back up under saddle. You could ride him up into the corner of the arena so his nose is in the corner before you asked him to back up. Now, the wrong thing, which is pushing into your hands and going forward, would be hard, and the right thing would be easier than that. Does that make sense there?
Yeah.
You're not whacking them in the head with a fence or anything. The fence is just there, and it would be harder to go forward than it would be to go backwards. That, you know, that would be one way you could do it. Another way you're making the wrong thing hard and the right thing easy is just the release of an aid. If you ask your horse to go forward and you apply an aid, let's say you apply a seat aid followed by a leg aid. As soon as your horse goes forward, so he's not going forward yet, your leg aid's on, as soon as he goes forward, you would just release that aid.
Right.
Wrong thing is not going forward, right thing is going forward. So it's not, you know, it's not about punishment or anything. And I mean, a lot of people already do it, but the thing, you know, you think about if you ask your horse to go and he goes, and then you keep asking while he's going, you're not making it any easier to go than to not go. And I have a lot of people say, my horse is lazy and I've got to keep kicking him. I have to keep, you've probably heard this one before, I have to keep kicking my horse to keep him going. And I tell those people, you don't have to keep kicking him to keep him going. You choose to.
Exactly.
No one's got a gun to your head. And yeah. I said, think about it from your horse's point of view. He would like comfort. He would like you to not be adding any pressure to him. And if you think about it, you've got a horse that doesn't want to go, and the whole time he's going, you're kicking on him, what do you do to stop? Like, oh, he stops really good. I just have to stop kicking and he stops. And I say, there's the problem. Is your horse thinks stopped is the place he doesn't get kicked, and going forward is the place he gets kicked. And the whole time he's going forward, he's like, can I stop now? Can I stop now? Can I stop now? Is it time to not get kicked? Is it time to not get kicked? And so it's just about leaving them alone when they are doing what you want.
Exactly. And we loved your horse spray.
Oh my goodness.
For how many years we have done this horse spray thing. And then we just watched your video one time. We went out and we did it with everybody. We're like, whoa. Now, wasn't that the easiest thing in the world?
Yeah, it's crazy. Just that just working with them in the way that they know how to work. It was such a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the fly spray video, so it was filmed at a clinic, and I showed up in the morning, and a lady had a horse tied to the trailer trying to fly spray it, and the horse was dodging all over the place. And so I said, just save that for the clinic, and we'll bring her in the arena. And so what the lady was doing was she was trying to fly spray her horse and stop it from moving at the same time. Horses need to be able to move their feet if they need to move their feet. You cannot if you try to block that in there, the energy's in there anyway. It's going to come out somewhere, and they need to move their feet to feel safe. And so all I did with that lady was like, I mean, I got the spray bottle, I think, but I went to spray near the horse, and he moved around because his thing moving around would make the spray go away. It's kind of, you're going to get two things out of it. One is they think moving around will make the spray go away. That's the first one. And they move around and it doesn't go away. But then after a while, when they're moving around and the spray doesn't contain all the big nasty things that the horse naturally thinks it's going to do, it's not going to eat me, it's not going to kill me, I'm not going to die from it, they kind of go, oh, it's not that big a deal. And then they stop moving, and then you take it away, then you stop spraying. So you're giving the horse control. And I think wrong thing hard, right thing easy, and all good horse training is about allowing the horse to have control. You know, we're control freaks and we want to control the horse, but really, in order to get along with horses really well, the first thing you've got to do, and it's hard for a lot of people, is give up that need to control the situation. You know, I always tell people, you don't control the horse. The horse controls himself.
Yes. Praise the Lord on that one. I love that.
And, you know, and that comes down to trust. And, you know, I don't think your horse can trust you if you don't trust your horse. And I really think that whole giving up control is where the trust comes in.
You bet.
Before we go any further, it's not my way. I didn't invent this stuff. What I kind of consider myself a dot joiner. There's a lot of different people who are dot joiners. Anybody's ever read a book called Outliers by a fellow named Malcolm Gladwell? You ever read Outliers? Oh, you need to read Outliers. But he's a dot joiner. He doesn't do the research. He just finds stuff that people have done, and he ties it all together. If you've ever read a book called The Secret.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean, she's a dot joiner. All she does is she figures out what they're all doing the same. Exactly. I'm a dot joiner. For the most part, most of the stuff that I do, I didn't invent. I stole it from somebody else. And I think my role here in all this stuff is just to be an explainer. You know, I've had people tell me time and time again, hey, I've heard that before, but I never quite heard it in a way that made sense. And so that seems to be my talent. It's, you know, it's not something I've got to lay awake at night and think about analogies and stuff. That just comes easy to me. So if I have a talent, that's probably the talent, is explaining stuff to people in a way they understand. But it's not the content is not, you know, my content. I mean, it's right. Everybody.
Right.
A lot of people know this stuff.
So wonderful, though, because, you know, that's the key to us learning, is hearing the story that resonates with us so it makes the logical sense to the parallel of how the horse would feel in that situation. So I love your gift. Your gift is beautiful. Keep it up.
What's interesting is I take a lot of, you know, like human analogies, and compare it to horses. You know, I take experiences in people's lives that they understand already, and I relate it to horses, and then they get that too. But recently, there's a lot of psychology stuff that I'll read stuff they do with humans, and I'll talk about it with horses. Well, I recently did some clinics in Australia, and there were two ladies there who are therapists, and they do equine-assisted psychotherapy.
Okay. Yeah.
But they're not really horse people.
Right.
They're therapists, and so they've been watching my videos because they use the videos. So they use what I do with horses to help people understand themselves.
Yeah.
So kind of the opposite of what I do. I do what, you know, I take what psychiatrists do with people and then explain, you know, similar with horses. So it was really interesting to have them there because it was the total opposite, you know, kind of the total opposite of what I do.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love that.
Okay, so Warwick, next question for you. How does the welfare of the horse come first for you in your training?
I'm just very, very, very aware of their mental state all the time. I was saying a minute ago, the I didn't make up all this stuff. I used to not have made up all this stuff, but the last couple of years I've been messing with some stuff with horses, and I've gone down this rabbit hole that I wasn't down before, and it's more of the relationship side stuff, and it's more about reading the very, 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 very small signs. And all this came about because Robin, my wife, bought a horse about 3 years ago. He was a very high-level reining horse, like very talented reining horse, but they couldn't get him shown because he spooked at the judges' chairs and things like that in the arena. And I said, oh, yeah, I'll buy the horse. I can fix anything, you know, buy that. Anyway, we got him home. I couldn't do a thing with him. And I don't mean I couldn't do a thing with him. You could do the reining stuff with him, but I couldn't make any headway with his mental health, basically. He's very shut down and very robotic, does what he's told, but there was no spark there. The ears didn't work, his eyes didn't work, his lips didn't work. He was just a kind of a shell of a horse. And nothing I had done previously worked with this horse. I couldn't change anything about his mental state. So I didn't try. I didn't, you know, I wasn't trying to beat a dead horse, so to speak. I stopped trying, but I think it left me open to taking in new information, looking at things outside the lens with which I've, you know, been viewing the whole horse thing up to that point in time. And so he really, really got me down that kind of rabbit hole. And so now these days I almost can't approach a horse without being very, very present and being aware of eyes, ears, mouth, tail, posture, the whole thing. And there's something I have been, you know, in the past it was, for me, it was all about training horses. You know, I was a horse trainer. You send me a horse, I have it in the stall, I get it out, I train to put it back. The stuff I've been on about the last couple of years is not so much about telling the horse what to do or teaching the horse stuff. It's telling the horse how much you're listening. And I had a horse at a clinic in Texas almost 3 years ago now. No, 2 years ago now, sorry. A Mustang, 9 years old, been out of the wild for 6 years, has done all the groundwork and all the ridden exercises and rides around okay, does it all okay, but every once in a while, out of the blue, he'll bolt for no reason at all. So the lady came to the clinic. It was a three-day clinic, and the first day she did some groundwork, the kind of groundwork I'd always been doing, and then the second day she was doing some groundwork and she'd walk down beside this little fella and ask him to disengage his hind end, but he started to block her out, so he'd turn his head as she went to go down his near side. And in the past, I would have just reached under his jaws, excuse me, moved his head over. And the reason you do that is so you, instead of you walking around their head, you just have them change eyes. So they put you in their other eye without you walking around them. That's what I would have done in the past. But what I did with him was when he turned his head and blocked me out, I stepped back and I said, "That bothers you, doesn't it?" And I kind of stepped back and waited till he softened a little bit. I think he licked and chewed or he blinked or something like that. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just experimenting from different things I'd read. And I did it about five or six times. And after a while, he let me down that side and didn't block me out. So then I thought, what else can I do? So I just reached up and I put my hand on his neck about here. And when I did, he raised his head up about an inch. And as he raised it up, I took my hand away and said, I see your discomfort. And I just waited for him to show some sign of coming back to the real world, blinking or whatever. Did that for probably 5 minutes or so, maybe a little longer. And then I went, oh, okay, now I'm just going to walk down here and disengage him, because I could touch him on the neck and he didn't raise up. Then I disengaged him a couple of times and stepped back, and he seemed like he was a little more relaxed. And I just handed the rope back to the her name was Hannah. I said, "Here you go, Hannah. Just hang on him for a minute. Just let him sit. Don't do anything with him." I went and helped somebody else, and about 10 minutes later, I hear a collective gasp from the whole crowd there. Like, and I turned and looked, and this horse had buckled at the knees and fallen down on the ground and was snoring dust clouds in the arena. Like, just wow. His belly. He was laying on his belly with his nose resting on the ground, you know, like that.
Yeah.
Snoring dust clouds. And then he had a roll, then he got up, and Hannah looked at me and she said, "What was that?" I said, "I've got no idea." He lay down and went back to sleep again, snored, got up. Did that a couple of times and then lay down and went to sleep and slept for an hour. And I have a morning group and an afternoon group in my clinics, and it was just before lunch. It was before lunch, and we're going to break for lunch, and they wanted to take a group picture. So I had Hannah just sit on his back and everybody lined up beside this sleeping Mustang. And so after that, when I came home from that, and the next day, sorry, he came in the morning and she said, what do you want me to do? I said, just hang on to him and see what he does. He lay down and went to sleep and slept for 4 hours with other horses riding around him. Anyway, this horse never lays down. The whole time she's had him, he hasn't lain down before. And if he has, like, you see him out in the pasture, as soon as a human appears somewhere, he jumps up. So I did some research when I got home. Well, horses can sleep standing up. We know that.
Right.
But they cannot get that REM sleep that they need standing up. They have to be able to feel safe and lay down to do it. And I think what happened was that horse had not ever had enough REM sleep. She's probably not had very good REM sleep in the last 6 years and had a lot of catching up to do. And as soon as he felt safe enough to let down, he laid down and went to sleep. But what made him feel safe? The fact I was listening. I was not telling. I was listening.
Exactly.
Yeah. And up to that point in time, all my training had been about telling, asking, receiving what I want. Very good. I mean, I was always doing it in a very nice way, but this took me down a rabbit hole. Like, but that's probably the biggest thing is like letting them know you are concerned about them. Something I have been messing with for a while is whether you're around a horse, actually got them online on halter, or you approach their pen or go anywhere near them. I have noticed that some horses will turn their head and then they will turn their eyes more than their head and they'll have disinterested ears. So if they do that, when they turn their head away from you, they are basically saying your presence is overpowering. I wish I could leave, but I can't. So I'm just going to go internal. Yeah. It's different than a horse, his head turns, his eyes turn, his ears prick. That's a horse that's looking at something. This is not looking at something. And probably for me, the biggest indicator is their eyes turn more than their head. So if you're on this side, you can see the white in the back of their eye get bigger because they kind of just, wish I could leave and I can't. What I have noticed, and this is kind of what I do with that horse, what I have noticed is I've just stepped, as soon as I see that, I step backwards.
Nice.
And what will happen a lot of times when you step backwards is they'll wait there a second. And if you just wait and just basically hold space for them, they'll blink and lick and chew and kind of look at you like, you were listening to me.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's crazy the difference it makes.
It really is.
Now, not every horse does it. And some people have had trouble with this because they think you're supposed to step backwards from everything your horse does. And I've had some people say, now my horse is running over me and biting me. It's like, well, you step back at the wrong time. You can't step back for a horse being pushy. You've got to step back for a horse telling us that your presence is overpowering. And I had another example here at a clinic. And do I have time to tell another quick story?
Yeah, go for it.
She does
the scrap.
That one in Texas was a Mustang. Anyway, Easter the same year, I had a clinic here at my place. And so we have chickens on our place and they wander around. So the first day of this clinic, there was a Mustang. There's a tip trainer had this Mustang for one of the Mustang makeovers. And he'd ridden him probably 10 times or whatever, does all the groundwork. But this horse, when he came in the arena, he just stands like braced, his neck's in the air, his eyes are glazed over, his ears are disinterested. There's no horse. It's just a statue of a horse. He's very tense. And the guy wanted me to help him with some of the physical, like asking things. And I said, hang on, just let's slow down. I don't think this horse is savvy in this whole being asked to do things. So I took the lead rope and I thought, what am I going to do to let him know I'm listening if he doesn't have any expression, if he doesn't do anything? He's got to tell me that's too much, you know. So I just walked towards him. And as I got closer to him, he raised his head up about that far. Nothing else changed, but he just raised his head up slightly. I stepped backwards and waited. And after a while, he started to blink a little bit. And I probably did this for 10 minutes or so. So instead of him telling me that's too much, I actually stepped towards him and I got to that threshold where he started to get a little bit concerned, stepped back and waited. And then I was turned to the crowd and I was telling a bit of a story and he started to approach me and try to sniff me and snort, but then, so he was trying to interact with me and facing him, he wouldn't do it. But when I turned my back, he would do it, but then it still wasn't getting anywhere. And so I thought, I'll just cross my legs and sit down. So I just sat down on the ground. And as soon as I did, he spread his legs and urinated. Like, this took his biggest pee. And everybody's like, wow, he's relaxed. And I said, well, I don't know if that means he's relaxed. No, it might have been a coincidence. Because a lot of times someone, you know, something happens, a horse does something, you go, oh, that's related to that. If it happens a number of times that way, it's a thing. If not, it's a coincidence. But anyway, I said, I don't know, it might be a coincidence. And that's about all I did with him that day. The next day we got him out, and I did the same thing, and he started engaging me a little sooner. And at one point in time, he spread his legs and peed again. And then I was standing there, and he was standing like, if he's standing here, like 90-degree angle to the camera, I was talking to the crowd about something or other, and he was just standing over there. So I haven't asked him to do anything. I haven't moved him. I haven't done any groundwork. And when the guy that had the horse was doing groundwork with him, he went around with his head to the outside and his head in the air, and he's just stiff and braced and the whole bit. So I was standing there telling a story, and all of a sudden he walks off, and he walks a three-quarter circle around me and backs up away from me, facing me. And when he walked that three-quarter circle around me, he had a perfect bend. His axis was turned loose here. He had a perfect bend. He was relaxed, and he had energy. I don't know what's going on, because that horse doesn't move like that. So, and he backed up, and I'm like, so he's right in front of me now. And I said to the crowd, I have no idea what that was. And they said, well, maybe he's protecting you from the chicken. And I said, what chicken? And they said, look behind him. I looked behind him, and there's one of my chickens is coming across the arena behind him. And I'm like, you guys have watched too many Black Beauty movies. That, you know, you've watched too many movies with Dakota Fanning to where there's a racehorse and he won't run anymore. And Dakota Fanning's 12 years old. She gets him by the face, kisses him on the nose and said, I love you forever if you'll just win. And then he wins a Kentucky Derby, you know. I said, that doesn't happen. So he's standing there, and then the next thing, he walks two circles around me. Same thing, real big bend, bending his atlas, I mean, his axis. I mean, looks like you've done a lot of really good groundwork with him. Circles around twice, stops and backs up again towards that chicken. And that chicken walks in a quarter of a circle around me that way, and he side passes facing me and keeps himself between me and the chicken.
Wow.
And then the chicken kind of walks off, and he just kind of goes back to sleep. And everybody said, he saved you from the chicken. I'm like, oh, I don't think that happened. Over Sunday night, I videoed the whole thing. So I go in the house, I'm going to crack a beer, and I'm going to see what really happened. Because these people said he was protecting me from the chicken, which is not what happened, until I watched the video. He was protecting me from the chicken.
See?
And it's, I would have to say, it's probably the first time a horse has ever done something for me that I didn't train him to do or ask him to do.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Well, I have to say, what a beautiful gift you had with Robin's horse coming into your life.
Oh, yeah.
Opening the path to see something different so you can gift all of us with more of that comprehension of what these horses are really needing and asking us to be a part of. So yay to Robin's horse coming in too.
Yeah, so it's been very interesting. It's been a whole human journey as well as a horse journey.
Yeah, no, it really is. And it's really great that, you know, I've always said it's amazing for out of animals on this earth. I always say it blows my brain, a prey animal and we as predators, how parallel we have so many things in that commonality piece. However, the difference is, as predators and as humans, I should say, we do too much thinking and not enough of this. So we're always messed up inside, where a horse doesn't do that because they don't know how to do that because they're a prey animal. So it's really cool when we can parallel the two, human versus horse.
Even understanding that a horse can only think and act like a horse. And yes. So when there's that confusion, it's within us. It's not the horse. It's us who's confused.
Yeah. Horses are very good at sensing incongruency within us. And what's been funny with this whole journey for me, so this horse over this side here, Bundy, I've had Bundy 7, I've had him the whole time. And Bundy and I used to get along just fine. Bundy was good, but I realized I just trained Bundy to be very obedient. Okay, you know, my background is in the reining, and it's an abject lesson in obedience, really. I trained Bundy to be very obedient. I wasn't listening; I was telling.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always got along with him fine. But then when I went down this whole listening path and giving him a voice, oh my goodness, did he have a voice? And we had some trouble for a while. And I think it's because I was now incongruent. I wasn't before. because my inside, my inner landscape, my outer landscape expected my horse to be obedient. So they were both on the same path. I say both on the same page. And then when I started doing this other stuff, at times my actions were different from my thoughts. I was telling him I was listening, but inside I wasn't, or inside I was telling him I was listening, outside I was telling him I wanted to be obedient. And like he'd pin his ears and do all sorts of, you know, like bare his teeth, like things that Bundy doesn't do.
Yeah.
And I got through that now. And, you know, in the past, if a horse was doing that, I would want to respond to it and say, don't do that. And I really had to like bite my tongue and go, okay, I get what you're saying. And it's been interesting trying to help people with this stuff, because it's, you know, like in my online video site, I've now got two paths there, what I call the skills path and the relationship path. And the skills path is what I used to do. If you teach your horse skills, you will build some relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's relationship path. If you build a relationship in that they're going to be building skills, and it all depends which one you want to go down. And the one I was on before was basically the skills path. Now this whole relationship path, if you're not real good around horses, like if you're new to horses, it's almost hard to go down that path, because you have to be able to read such, you know, subtle things about them to stay safe. You know what I mean? The whole stepping back when they're doing things, if you get that wrong, you can get your horse to be, I won't call it aggressive, let's call it assertive sort of thing. And so it's, you know, I like to quote Sir Richard Branson. He said, in order to break all the rules, first you have to learn all the rules. And I almost think that you've almost got to go down that skills path first, or have been down that path for a while before you can go down this other path, because it's, you see everything differently. I was in Scotland a couple of years ago doing some clinics, and the guy that organized my clinics there was a black belt in karate when he was 12. And he was telling me that when he was trying to get to be a black belt, he thought, when I get to be a black belt, that's when I'll know everything. And he got to be a black belt. Then he wanted to be a second degree black belt. And he thought he was going to learn new stuff. And they said, no, you don't learn anything new to be a second degree black belt. You go back to the start and you see everything you've learned before with a black belt's eyes. And you see it completely differently.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the way to go forward. So I think it's almost like that now. I'm seeing everything completely differently, but I'm struggling whether I, you know, whether people should do that first, because I think it's a little less, maybe less safe if you make a mistake. There's much more margin for error, I think, because it's not black and white. I used to be able to say, oh, your horse does this, do this. Now it's kind of like, it depends on them, depends on you. So yeah, things are getting less clear to me. They're getting more clear, but they're getting less clear.
That makes total sense, actually. That one I understand. But you're absolutely right. I do believe for that safety component alone for the human being, you must know the skill first.
Yep.
Because if you're too afraid to even know that skill, oh my goodness, you can't go to that next place, because you've got to be strong in understanding how to be safe. Safety is the number one thing for the horse and the human.
Well, and I think that even leads us perfectly into this question. What piece of advice would you give to all people who are thinking of owning a horse to maintain their welfare?
Or own a horse already?
That's a good question.
That's a biggie.
Because the one piece of advice. That's a tough one.
Maybe take your
It's not a tough one, because I have one piece of advice is I think being present when you're around a horse is the biggest part of the whole thing. And by being present, it's you know, being present without judgment, and which is really, really hard. And why I say be present without judgment, some people are around their horses and they're not mentally present. They're thinking about work, kids, whatever. But other people are around their horses and they're very present. They notice everything the horse does, but then they read something into that and then they go down that hole. Oh, my God, when I get to that bush, he's going to spook and I'm going to fall off from, you know, the hospital. And, will a helicopter land here? I don't think so. The ambulance are probably coming. Which hospital will I go to? Oh, and I've got to call my husband to pick up the kids from school. And who's going to make their lunch tomorrow? they go down that path. And so you can't be not here, but when you are here, you can't read all those negative thoughts into what your horse is doing. And so you have to, and so I don't know if that's good advice or not, but I think that's the one skill you've got to have. And I think that skill carries over into everything else in life too.
Oh, you bet. I think that's a great piece of advice, you know, even for the human being. So again, paralleling that back, we don't know when we're going to die, when our last breath is going to be. So we don't learn to actually understand how to live in our moment, because the moment is all we have. We don't know if we're going to make it to make that meatloaf supper tonight. We have no idea. So we can live in our moment. And the horse, to me, makes us accountable to live in the moment. Because if we aren't accountable to live in the moment, they let us know very, very quickly. Like, hello, pay attention, because this is not where you're supposed to be. So I think that's really a great piece of advice for the welfare component.
Yeah, I mean, because when you, I mean, I talked before about, for me, their mental health is the most important part of the whole thing. Because if you think about a lot of horses that have physical issues, a lot of times the physical issues come from years of being ridden while having a brace in their body. They're crooked, they're stressed, they're whatever. And it's just like us. You know, we carry a lot of our stuff right here in our shoulders, and I think horses do too. What was I going to say about that? Oh, yeah, so that it's the mental – I think the mental health of your horse is paramount. But your horse's mental health really depends on yours.
Yes. Absolutely. Oh, bingo.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, this whole rabbit hole I've gone down now, I've undertaken a lot of mindfulness practices, and the mindfulness practices have helped me with the horses, and the working with the horses has helped me with mindfulness practices too. Because I think I got to a point to where I kind of know what I'm doing with horses. I can almost do it without – it's like driving a car. You can be thinking about 10 other things while you're doing it. And so, and I think I kind of got to that point, and now I'm really making a concerted effort to make sure when I'm around a horse, I'm very, very, very present. And so I just give myself a checklist, eyes, ears, mouth, tail, just basically being aware of everything that's going on with them all the time. And what's interesting is now when I approach any of my horses, like Bundy especially, hey, here comes Warwick. How are you going? Because I'm there. You know, before I could probably walk past him, you know, if he's out in the pasture or whatever, I could walk past that pasture thinking about what I'm going to do and not even being present. And I think my horses had got to the point to where if you had someone in a aged care facility that the nurses didn't engage them, they just went about their business. They walk past, you know, walk in their room, give them their food, not, hey, good morning, how are you, but just treat them like a piece of the furniture. I think it kind of gotten that way a little bit, you know, because I've been so in my head about other things, you know what I mean? And just, yeah, it's really interesting. They're all much more present with me now. I'm more present with them. It's very, very cool.
Very, wow. So exciting.
Yeah, and I'm starting to notice a pattern as we do these welfare series each week, is that a huge part of the horse's welfare is making sure that our welfare and our mind is in it as well, because if it's not, it reflects on our actions and with our horses.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think they're huge. You know, I said before, they're very good at noticing incongruency with us, you know, we are in our landscape and our outer landscape, but they're very, very, very good at noticing when we're, well, they know when we're not present. And I, this is going to sound a little crazy, but I think they can read our minds.
They can. And that is not crazy.
Oh, good.
You know, no, seriously, because even if we take it to that science and an energy component, yep, when our thought and our gut is off, like we get love, excitement, anger, everything in our body changes with our mentality and with what we're feeling. So, of course, all that stimulus would go to our horse with our change. So that makes complete sense. We actually always say a horse can hear everything that you think and everything that you feel, not because they understand English or Spanish, because horses only speak one language across the world. It's because of scientifically what happens to a human body when we change our thought and our feel. So they can read our mind. So you are absolutely right.
You know, in the last few years, I've been around a number of people, and a lot of them are around Tom Dorrance and Ray Hunt. And they can ask their horse to do something mentally, and the horse will do it.
Wow.
When, there's a lady that lives in California, and I had messaged her on Facebook a while ago about the prospect of that being a thing, you know. And I was asking her, if that's a thing, how would you go about explaining that to people? And her reply was, you know, so I'm still at this point in time thinking it might be a thing. And so her reply was, you know, for us of us that it comes easy to, it's really hard to explain to people.
Makes
so
sense.
In that sense, for us of us that it comes easy to, it tells me she can do it. And the more I went down that rabbit hole, there's a lot of people who can do it. And all it is, I'm starting to realize, is your first ask is just having an intention. And I've been doing that a lot with my horses. And so before I ask them to do anything, and some people this comes naturally to, they just do it. I've never done it before, is having a mental intention before I ask them to do something. And I think the reason I haven't done it before is because I've always been too in my head thinking about stuff. You know, I used to think my greatest strength was the fact I can think a lot. and so Bundy, this horse right there, he's always, I don't want to call him a donkey because he's not a donkey, but he's always had that, like I had him at a horse expo in LA a couple of years ago. And when I got done with the demo, he's on a lot of my videos, and someone came up and said, oh, we love Bundy. I'd love to take him home. I said, he would eat you for breakfast. He's a minimalist, and it's almost not, are you going to make me, but are you serious? Okay. And that's always been him. He's always been like that. That's just who he is. Not all horses are like that. Well, since I've been working on this intention stuff, I've realized that's not him. He wants an intention before any ask, and he's completely different now. I've been messing with some Liberty stuff and adding the intention in there. This horse, he tells me when I'm present, when I'm not, because if I, you know, if I just think about ask, like let's say he's beside me, I want to go. If I just walk off without having an intention and bring my energy up before I move my feet, and I'm like, and I used to like, hey, get up here. Now it's like, oh, sorry, Bundy. I was thinking about something else. Let me back up a bit. Intention, energy. And by the time I move my feet, he's there with me. So he's like, he's my teacher. Oh. I mean, they're all my teacher. But,
yes.
But yeah, now that I've cottoned on to that, it's, yeah, I think that's, I think the end result of that is when you can get, you know, can start to think about things and they do it. So it is a thing. Have you ever heard of Kurt Pate?
Nope.
Kurt's from Montana. He's a ranch cowboy type guy. Does a lot of work with cattle and dogs. Gives a lot of stockmanship clinics, like, you know, low stress cattle handling, stuff like that. And so I gave a talk at a horse expo in LA last year, probably. So it's a horse expo, but it's not a demo with a horse. It's in a lecture hall. And the lecture was called Everything I Learned in Life, I Learned from Horses. And it was about different life experiences I've had, things I've learned from horses. And one of them was this whole, I got talking about this at the very end. And I said, the people who can do this, seems like there are a lot of them around Ray Hunt and Tom Dorrance. Well, I know Kurt Pate's been around Ray Hunt a lot. So, and Kurt was sitting in my lecture, sitting in the second row, and said, so Kurt, let me ask you, do you mentally picture what you want your horse to do before you ask him to do it? And he said, no, but I do it with cattle.
Interesting.
Really? Does it work? And he said, only when I'm present.
Oh, wow.
Oh, the thing about this, you are not riding the cow.
Nope.
You don't have a rein, you don't have a leg, you don't have a seat aid, and you can get the cow to do it if he's very present.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Well, you know, and it really, if we go back to even the book you brought up, The Secret, what is it? It's all intention.
It's all intention, yeah.
It's intention. This is how humans, horses, how we can move forward. So, wow, that's the cow. I just cannot get over the cow with intention. That is so brilliant, but it makes sense.
There's a lady I know in Wales, and she went to a private clinic in Sweden one time by a this clinic was by a lady who'd worked a lot with Tom Dorrance. And this lady was on about that exact thing at this clinic. And they went for a walk to get some more horses out of another pasture. So they're walking down a dirt road and there's pastures, you know, like this here, horses grazing in a pasture on both sides of the road. And one pasture had five horses in it, four sorrels and a bay. And she said to these people, here, I'll show you what I mean. I'll get the bay horse to come over here. So they're out in the pasture eating. She went over to the fence and stood there. And after a while, the bay horse that was grazing, he picked his head up and he kind of looked around and looked over at her and then walked over to the fence and stood in front of her. The four sorrel horses kept eating. And she turned to these people and she goes, I don't know why you can't do it. It's simple. I mean, this lady can, it comes so easy to her it comes so easy to her that she has a hard time explaining it. And I think for me personally, that's one of the reasons I can explain things well to people, because I don't think I'm very far ahead of the curve as a lot of the people I'm helping. Like, it's not like I don't have to think about it. You know, I can explain everything I do. It's not like I've got this talent where I can just do stuff and then you can't explain it. I think I've bumbled around trying to understand this stuff for so long that I can really explain it to people. And so I think my ineptitude is actually a blessing.
I agree. That's true.
Oh my goodness, Warwick. Well, we could sit here and talk with you all day, and I'm sure everyone agrees with us. So if you want to learn more and you have access to Warwick's course,
and I have to tell you, this course, it's priceless to me, because for what it costs and everything he gives you, seriously, it takes months to go through, and then you want to repeat everything because you want to understand first, and then you want to go back, and then you want to work with each of your horses for each part of it. So to me, it's a course that can, it's like the Timex watch. It just keeps on ticking.
We've learned so much from it. It's taken us with our horses leaps and bounds, and you guys want this. So type easy in the comments, and his information will be sent straight to your Facebook Messenger.
Thank you.
Yeah, so thank you so much, Warwick. This was so incredible. We took so much from this. This was amazing.
It really was.
Thank you. I'm very appreciative. You guys had me on here, and I just got to say, I love this. I love what you guys are doing.
Oh, thanks.
You know, I think it's amazing stuff, and I think you are helping people.
You know, we really are, and I really love that you have said that, because, you know, in the 11 years for personally myself doing this, there has not been one human being who hasn't had a change because it's the horse who's helping them. It's not because it's the person who's saying, if you just change your attitude, or if you just speak up, or if you just do this. People are tired of hearing people tell them what it is that they need to do. But when the horse tells them something, and of course we know through how they communicate, the human being actually knows the answer to the problem, and then they get empowered.
And to make sure that we can keep doing this, we always are making sure that our horses are taken care of, because they're the foundation of everything that we do.
They are the foundation, and we have to do this all the time. It's not just once a month, hey, we get to work with the horse. Nope. It's all the time to keep that balance with that welfare component. So thank you. We really do appreciate that. That means a lot coming from you.
Yes, thank you so much.
No, you guys are awesome. I love it.
Good. Oh, yeah, we get to see you in another year. In real life.
I know. I don't really pay attention to where I'm going until I'm going there. So where am I going?
We get to come to you.
Oh, you're coming to my house.
Oh, awesome. Some coffee, some beer, some barbecue, and of course, learning.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Me too. So thank you so much. Have an amazing, amazing weekend. And we will see you on, obviously, social media platforms.
Yes. And join us next Wednesday as we have another exciting guest speaker joining us to talk about the welfare of the horse. We'll see you guys later.
Thanks, all.
Thank you. See ya.
Thanks so much for tuning in today with us gals from Equine Connection on today's episode of Changing Lives with a Horse, of course. Next week, we're going to have tons more information, and please join us then for more chatting on how these phenomenal creatures are really the best teachers around. We'll talk to y'all then.